Spirit Radio Podcasts.
It's time now to chat to Therese Davey for this week's Home and Lifestyle Tips. Good morning to Therese.
Good morning, Wendy.
So, your website of the week. Tell us what it's all about.
PositiveAgingWeek.com. It's Positive Aging Week this coming week. And they're looking at the theme of the impact of pandemics and how we address age and aging. Now, they have loads of activities going on around the country. You can see them when you get on the website. But lots of it is going to be online because of limited numbers and things. Positive Aging Week isn't just about those who are aging. It's for all of us to learn about aging and people's value in society, the diversity of their voices being heard, the older people in our community, the retired people in our community, and loads of things they can do and what they should be participating in and making their voice heard. It's for everyone, really, Positive Aging Week.
And yeah, but I find all these things are quite difficult during these times because usually there'd be like great events and you know, kind of meeting people and all that sort of stuff, which makes it difficult, you know, the kind of virtual side of it. But what can people do? I guess it's kind of trying to reach out to people in their communities in safe ways.
It is. And the other, there's all kinds of walking challenges and a week of wellness and fun in Goree and Wexford and various venues happening in Kilkenny, Tipperary, Waterford. But the thing about it is, maybe if you look it up and see, can you make the link and invite an older person into your house? And share the technology and let them have access to an online meeting for the first time. Maybe that's something somebody could do.
I know, and it's all about kind of seeing if we can teach people. I mean, yesterday evening it was so great to do, because we're in Dublin, we're locked down, Therese, to video call granny and granddad, and just how, you know, probably 6 months ago that would have been really difficult because it was all so new, and now it's just par for the course. Oh, it's the video call now, the weekly video chat with the grandchildren, and just how it enriches our communication, especially when we can't actually see each other.
Yeah, I think we have to try everything to keep everyone involved. And I suppose lockdown has put that challenge to us. How do we reach out to people in other ways but keep in touch with them? I rang my best friend in Donegal yesterday to sympathise and empathise with lockdown in Donegal.
So you have been keeping your eyes wide open. What is out there this week, Therese?
Super Value have lovely magazines with really gorgeous recipes that come out periodically during the year. And yesterday's one, our September magazine, has some lovely recipes, including something called a pizza bagel. What a clever way of getting wholemeal bagel and some cheese and some whatever meat or tomato sauce you want in a small portion, and that might engage children in eating a little more healthily. And I thought it was really, really clever. But they've lovely 15-minute recipes and baking recipes. So if you're in your local Super Value, see, can you find a copy of that magazine? But if you're in your local Super Value, you can also buy something that I've been missing for a couple of years now.
Go on.
Irish-made toilet roll.
Have we not been getting this made in Ireland at all?
Not for a couple of years, but now it's back. I don't know. I just probably wasn't productive or wasn't cost-effective. But I suppose with Brexit coming up, and we talked about this, about pre-Brexit stockpiling, what's going to be big and bulky coming in from the UK that it might be difficult to get, and toilet paper and nappies were one of the things that came up in conversation. But now it's being produced in Ireland, it might make it easier. Yes.
So there you go, buy Irish, especially for
buy
your toilet paper. Yes, all that stockpiling. Wasn't it during the first lockdown? It was toilet paper and bread we seemed to be obsessed with. Two things we can't live without, clearly. Now, you are actually, hang on, before I go to the next bit, I got it. Yeah. Oh, I am doing what I'm told. I am standing up. I stand up for some of my links, but not for all of them. But I'm standing now, Therese, so you can't give out to me.
And so am I. And I've just changed the screen on, and I can read what I talked to you about. Escape your chair and take a stand. That's what I'm telling people to do, because seemingly, I read a survey in the paper, 53% of people working from home are sitting 3 hours longer at work than they were used to in their workplace. And the Irish Heart Foundation are thinking about this and talking about this, and they're encouraging employers to make shortened video conferences, and they're encouraging people to move for a minute every hour and relieve those happy endorphins that get the stress and out of your system and help your heart. So, and tomorrow is World Heart Day. So we've a couple of suggestions for people to do to get walking out of their chair. What do you think of the first one? Set an alarm.
Yeah, I think whatever way you need to kind of remind yourself to get up and get moving, because if you're in your office, you're probably naturally maybe walking over to someone's desk, you might go for a walk for a cup of coffee. I'd always be saying, oh, take the stairs, but there mightn't be any stairs for you to take. But yes, you can get sucked into your little I don't know, world of work, and your head goes down and hours can go by, so you need to be reminded.
And I found that working at home during the lockdown in the home office shed at the back of the garden, the small space, I certainly wasn't walking as far. There was no photocopier to go for. There was no colleagues to meet, as you say, for the G. So set an alarm and make a point of moving every half hour. Work out with your kettle. While your kettle is boiling, don't just stand and watch the boiled kettle. Walk on the spot for a few minutes.
I love this. I love just the really great use of time, because people often say, oh, I don't have time for such and such. But, you know, you've got a minute, your Zoom is connecting, you're waiting for people to come on, do 20 squats. Or I put weights in my husband's office and I see him sometimes walking around on the calls with the headset, and he's curling the biceps to raise.
And that's point number three, walk and talk. Always take your telephone calls while standing or walking. Or if you're going out for your walk in the evening, bring your phone with you and do the talking then. It'll make the walk go faster. Take an exercise challenge. I never heard of this before, but group activity is more productive, and you are more committed when you exercise as part of a collective. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you want to try and keep up with everybody. And that's why, I guess, when you're doing classes and stuff, there's that encouragement, there's that motivation. Even if you go for a walk or run, I always find if someone's in front of me, you kind of want to catch up with them. But yeah, maybe you could do it in a virtual way with your colleagues.
They're out there. They're out there. There are classes and things going on. Create a commute. Now, this was clever. If you're working from home, you're not spending the time in the car commuting to work. So use that time by taking, and they're saying, take a 30-minute walk. Walk for 15 minutes, turn around, and come back before you start your work at the desk, because you would have wasted that time sitting in the car or the bus. Anyways.
Clever. And the thing is, fresh air, it's a lovely start to your day. If you need encouragement, I'm sneaking out, Trace. What I do is I kind of, because I'm gone early and I drop one of the children off, so I tell my husband to get the baby out in the baby carrier and I give him little jobs. We need milk, you know. So he has to walk down the road to the shop. Give yourself little things to do if you need that extra bit of encouragement.
And one of the things you said about going up the stairs instead of the lift, forget all the shortcuts. Start opting out of the shortcuts. Park at the furthest point in the car park. Don't do the online shopping. Go shopping and park at the furthest point in the car park. Skip the lifts, take the stairs. I thought this was an interesting one. Skip the car wash. Wash your own car. There's exercise in that. And I thought it was a really simple thing to do. You'd never think of that one. I thought it was good. Take advantage of TV time. Don't be fast-forwarding with the remote control when you've recorded something. Let the ad breaks happen and use the ad breaks to stand, stretch and go get a drink or do something. I thought that was a really original thought too.
Again, it's just a really good use of time. And what I would say as well, just to any mums and dads listening who've got kids, I think it's great to connect up that movement time with your time with your kids. Once work is over, that you get out into the garden and you're playing games, you know, that involve kind of running around or chasing, or we play hide and seek or whatever it is, that everybody is moving together and you're hitting two birds with one stone, because you're playing with your kids, you're having fun and you're moving as well.
In the fresh air, hopefully.
Exactly.
And the last one was, have a versatile desk space. Research has shown that height adjustable desks increase people's activity or standing time by an hour a day, and it increases productivity and it increases quality of life. And they say 50-50 is probably the best ratio to do with the sit and stand at these desks. And IKEA have a wind-up desk. My colleague showed me one on Zoom, and it was very simple to use. And there's also risers you can get just to sit on the top of your desk and will raise up your laptop or whatever, and you can collapse them down and stick them under your desk again. There are options there, and we're building a new office, and I'm really looking forward to my new rising desk, if I believe in it.
You know what, as soon as you're going through it, Therese, I think you need to do some tips in a few weeks' time on designing the best home office space. How about that?
Oh goodness, yeah.
You'll be an expert by the end of it, but the standing desk is great. It's much better for your back as well. But interesting point on the 50-50, it's not about standing all the time. It's a mixture of both.
Wendy, you just gave me a job of the week.
I know.
I'm hanging up now.
The tables have turned, Therese.
I'm hanging up now.
Okay, talk to you next week. That was Therese Davey with this week's Home and Lifestyle Tips. I'm delighted to have my next guest joining me very shortly. She's a very familiar face, especially for women in business, and many of you might know her from her time on Dragon's Den on RTE, or maybe you've tuned into one of her recent webinars from her Planet Women Academy, which is absolutely fantastic. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. One of the things that she is passionate about is being a champion of women in work and women in business. But there's so many different issues and barriers still ongoing. And there was a headline in the newspapers last week that caught my eye, which shows that there's still a massive issue in terms of women, in terms of their pay expectations, and that they will often not get paid the same amount for doing the same work as their male counterparts. So we're going to be talking about that with my next guest today, Nora Casey, Irish businesswoman, TV personality, broadcaster and author as well. The list goes on. Nora, thanks for joining us on the programme today.
Delighted to be with you.
Well, let's talk about that story. There's a headline last week saying that women graduating in Ireland can expect to earn up to 14% less than men annually. And I thought that word expect was kind of indicative of the problem. Is it that we're just saying, well, this is just the way it is and we're not fighting hard enough?
Oh, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. And for young women in particular, it's always confidence, not competence. I mean, we have young women and men coming out of university with the same, if not better, probably outcomes and exam results for the women. And yet, between the ages of 23 and 33, a lot of them get lost in the workplace. So there's lots of studies. It's believe it or not, it's very new science. Anybody looking in this area, you know, one minute you're reading that it's confidence, the next minute you read it's not confidence. I've spent my life seeing it. I see it in everyday life and corporate life. Girls don't put themselves forward for promotion, don't ask for salaries as high as the men do, don't have the confidence to sort of plunge themselves in to do a new project to show their boss they're capable of doing more. I think that women's confidence, the irony here is that a huge study was done a little while ago, and they discovered that at the magic age of 40, men and women are at equal confidence. And in fact, once you go over 50, women are more confident than men for whatever reason.
So we take our time to get there. We need to get there sooner. And that's one of the things that's probably important in terms of the graduation piece, because from my understanding of just the various different interviews we've done with financial analysts, they say that, you know, your starting salary, some of us might think, oh, well, I'll make it up later on, but it has a huge impact in terms of your income trajectory. So do women need to be taught that from the very start? When you go into that first interview, you know, make sure that you ask what you're worth.
Yeah, it's a really good confidence boost for a woman to actually have all that preparation in advance. But who gives it to her? Like, you know, I was doing a huge webinar on Friday on mentorship. To me, that is the magic, is if you have a mentor for young women in particular. In particular, I say under 25. That is where women, any study you look at, women's confidence levels are at their lowest and men's confidence levels are at their highest. I don't know why that is, but in their 20s, young men are full of bravado and confidence and they feel they can run the world. And then young women are so reticent in putting themselves forward for anything. And I could give you a litany of about 15 studies that have showed that women predict they'll do worse in tests, even when they don't, that they ask for salaries lower than what they should be or what they should expect, and they don't. But for me, young women in the workplace need to have a mentor to help them to take the plunge, because it's very hard. When you need to do something for the first time and you're terrified and scared, and I've been that person, you've got a rash and I always get a rash down my neck and my throat gets all lumpy, and you need somebody to hold your hand and say it's okay. And once you do it the first time, whether it's speaking in front of a group of people or going for that job interview, then it feels better to go the second time and the third time. But it's very, very hard to take that plunge.
I think Nora, probably young women listening, would be surprised here. Nora Casey gets nervous, she gets rash, because that's maybe what women might think. They might listen to you and go, that's Nora Casey, she can do everything. She's all, look at her CV, and you know, I could never be like that. And again, just kind of not having the confidence in ourselves.
And when you have to remember, I grew up in the Phoenix Park, one of eight in the lodge there, and I went to a desk school in Stony Batter, and you know, the chances of somebody like me doing what I ended up doing in life are pretty slim. And so a lot of my life I had to take huge risks, and there's been lots of adversity, and I've built up resilience over time. But I was not a confident girl. I wasn't the one to put my hand up first. I started off life in nursing. Anybody who starts off life in nursing is not ambitious to make millions. They're ambitious to change society or to do some good for people. So I wouldn't have said that confidence was my number one skill until I got, I'd say, well into my late 20s, early 30s.
And that confidence piece, I know something you were talking about with the webinar that you had on Friday, and you've touched on it, Nora, already, is about getting a good mentor. What's the best way of trying to find one? You might have a woman listening to them going, great, I want one, but how do I go about it?
I would say two things. One is, because we don't have a huge amount of time, but I'm going to post up the link to the webinar. It's a masterclass, by the way, of so many people confuse what mentorship's about. They don't really understand it. But this tells you everything that you need to know. And the most important thing for me is matching. It is a little like speed dating. You know, if you've got the wrong match, I always say to women, what's worse than no mentor? Having a bad one. We had a woman during the panel on Friday who said that she went to what she thought was a mentor to ask whether she could go for a job, for a promotion, and the mentor advised her not to because she'd a young child. Now, that's somebody who's not actually advancing you, who's not trying to get you to the pinnacle of your life and fulfill your potential. That's somebody who's holding you back. So for me, it's very unregulated. You don't want to get somebody who feels they might be good at it. You want somebody who's properly trained, who's got a lot of wisdom and skills. And it's not about age. I just have to say that really quickly, because I've been mentored by young people in digital areas that I've known nothing about. So it is about somebody, though, having skills and wisdom that you lack, and knowing which bit that you lack. And then going out there and, sorry, having the confidence to say, please, can you have a cup of coffee or can you have a chat with me? I think you could be just right for me. And if it doesn't work, my old chairman, God rest his soul, is gone now, but he used to always say, it's okay to fail, but fail fast. So if you know it's not working out and that match isn't a great partnership, then just drop it and
seek another mentor.
Yeah.
One piece, of course, as we've been talking about, Nora, is trying to give women the right mentors and more confidence in themselves. But what about on the kind of employer's side? Is there enough of a sea change there? Or sometimes there might be a feeling that if they can get away with paying women less, they will. And I've had various situations over the years where I've had friends where they've just through sheer coincidence, they've heard that a male colleague who's in the exact same role, the same level, same experience, is getting paid thousands more than them. But even still, they're afraid to kind of challenge their employer and say, what's going on here?
Yeah, and I'll give you two pieces of advice on that. One is that the issue about it, of course, is equal pay legislation. And the government has committed to monitoring the gender equality. Now, this is looking at pay averages and within individual organisations. When they did it in the UK, I worked in London for 20 years, so a lot of my colleagues are there. They would have been proudly boasting about the companies they worked for being, you know, very, very gender diverse, very much into diversity, and then suddenly discovering that women on average were being paid 30-40% less. So it's more about a lack of opportunity. You know, women are being held at the lower levels and they don't get the chance to rise up in terms of leadership. Then secondly, the one big area that women, the gap they saw in women's compensation was in commission. And that's bonuses, that's rewards you get. So one of the things I'm always talking about with companies is that if you have a reward system based on an individual, you're not going to be benefiting women, because years and years of giving women awards on stage, saying how wonderful they are, no matter how great they are, from presidents all the way through to women in arts and culture and authors, not one of them has ever stood up and said, thank you very much, it was all me. They all stand up and say, this is not just about me, it's about the team, it's about the people around me. Women very much want to feel that in their workplace, whatever they do, that it is a team engagement. So individual rewards for somebody you know, who makes that killer move or that risky behaviour, that doesn't suit women and they don't excel at it. It does suit men. For whatever reason, men like that feeling of going out there and doing that sale and, you know, acting as lone wolves, perhaps, whereas women don't. The other little tiny hint of advice I'd give you, I was once in a position where, in London, where I was taking over from a man in a media role. He was very well known, but not more known than I was. He was experienced, but hadn't any more experience than I did. And when I went in to discuss my salary, they offered me a salary which I was pretty certain was lower than what he was doing. It was the exact same job, by the way. Exact same job, we were presenting the same program, exact same hours. And I said, is that the same as, let's call him John, as John was being paid? Oh, absolutely, yes it is. And I said, okay, I'll come back to you tomorrow, let me think about it. So I went home and I wrote a note, and the note said that if in the future it was to emerge that John was paid even a cent more than I was to be paid for the same role, they had to immediately offer me double my salary in compensation. And I came back up and I presented it to the chief, and he said, what's this? And I said, well, if you're absolutely sure that John and myself are going to be paid exactly the same and there'll be no embarrassment to me in the future that you somehow paid me less because I was a woman, you'll be happy to sign that. within 24 hours, I had a stronger offer on the table.
Again, listening to that, Nora, I'd say, oh my goodness, you had some confidence in yourself. And, you know, because women might feel, oh my gosh, that could have gone either way. But you obviously just had such self-belief. How did you get there?
Well, for me, that would be quite damaging personally as a woman, I think, who, you know, I haven't actually had anything handed on a plate to me. And I've thought and done, like, education is my watchword. I've gone back to college and university so often in my life to try and get to be where I am. I would never assume that I can do something without learning about it first. And you can see, they call it the she session. Not massively into all these buzzwords, but what I can see absolutely since the pandemic has started is that years and years of work in gender diversity has been rolled back, and pretty rapidly. I'm looking at television programs, Wendy, at night time, that before would have at least paid a nod to having women and men as equal voices, and they are comfortably doing all male panels. They may, you know, they may sit back and rest on the laurels of the fact that it's a woman presenter and that all the voices can be male. I'm looking at really well-known corporations, financial services companies in Ireland that I've worked with in the past, every week giving me details of a webinar with three men on the panel. You know, and I'm the one, and they know who they are, because I will send them a lovely note and say, I hope you don't mind me raising this with you, but this is like the sixth time you've sent me notification of a webinar. Do you not have any women in this space?
And is it a case of there isn't the women, or are women not being asked, or are they not saying yes?
When the chips are down and people are working fast and under pressure, they rely on their contacts. They rely on people that are close to them. So in the pandemic, when they needed an expert on business, and it's a man who happens to be finding the expert, well, naturally, he's going to have more male contacts in his book. I mean, if you asked me to name 50 women in business, I could do it off the top of my head. I know that most men couldn't. They'd struggle to do that. So it just happens to be this is where I network and this is where my space is. So I guess that while they were trying to pull together those panels on all of those current affairs programs, whether it was business or economics, and even, by the way, on home working, they managed to find consistently men commentators rather than female ones. There is a group that's been monitoring all of that. So, you know, you don't have to take my say-so for it, but time and again, like I picked up the Guardian. I worked in London for so long, and the Guardian is the most woke newspaper you could find. It's like politically correct to a T. And because I was working with women in sport, there was a great article that talked about fans, and big, long, long, deep read about fans and how much they miss their sport. And I said, great, I'll read that. I read it, and I got to number 23 of men talking about the sport they missed and how they missed it. And the final one was a woman, and she spoke about the fact that she used to always wheel her father out to watch the cricket at Lord's, and that was what she missed about sports. Now, given that football is the number one fan activity for women in football and women in the UK, the Guardian had completely missed the entire content being anything to do or relevant to women.
So so many frustrating examples. Certainly something we're very proud of this show is to have the fit. We monitor it all, and we always have usually more women than men in terms of our commentators. It is very achievable and possible. Just finally to ask you, Nora, before you go, just for women who are listening at the moment, particularly those maybe who are finishing college soon or maybe even looking at changing jobs, and they want to know kind of the best way to maximise their opportunity and making sure that they are getting paid what they deserve, what are one or two things that they can think of to move forward?
Well, the one great thing is there should be a revolution in women working at the moment because of working from home. You know, so there's no reason, whether you're living in, you know, a small town in Ireland or you're living in Dublin or Cork or Galway, you should absolutely go for broke. Go for the big job. You can work for a big multinational. You work for a global giant. You don't have to take local employment if it's not there and it's not at a standard and it's not paying the rate that you feel you should be paid. And always, like, remember that the behavioural studies time and again say that women underestimate, you know, by as much as 30% what they're worth or what they'll do in exams. So whatever your number is, increase it by 30% when you go in to ask for your
good advice.
Salary.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really do feel this should be. I know I'm talking about that. Maybe that's just the immediate first 9-10 months of the pandemic that you end up having this situation where women are being rolled back. A lot of women, unfortunately, were last in the door, especially at senior levels. So when companies are saying goodbye to people, it happens to be women that are losing the jobs. And secondly, where childcare doesn't exist, and school, you know, we've got the children back to schools. So there's a long period of time when they weren't in schools, and there's still question marks over local COVID outbreaks and the impact of that. It's women that invariably end up being the ones that don't work, because childcare is just imperative. You know, you can't just say, you know, in a way, now we've moved out of the you know, are people going to be working home for a short period? Inevitably, they're going to be working home for a very long period of time. So it's necessary for everybody's health and well-being, and most of all the children's, that childcare is available for them.
Nora, thanks so much for some really good advice this morning. Thanks for joining us on the programme. That's Nora Casey, Irish businesswoman, broadcaster, author and founder of Planet Women, joining us this morning. You know, your CV can say a lot, but often the best way to get across your experience, your personality, who you are, is obviously doing an actual interview. And that's body language, conversation, personality. And you yourself have a lot of control over how an interview goes. But what is it like doing an interview during this pandemic, where I would imagine most interviews are taking place, you know, via Zoom and, you know, over the phone, all that sort of stuff, which could be quite challenging and also daunting? On the line to chat to us about preparing for this type of interview, an online interview, we've Marie Laffey from the Career Development Centre at the National University of Ireland in Galway. Marie, thanks for joining us on the programme today.
Thank you, Randy, for having me.
So I'd imagine the job interview process has changed quite a lot during COVID.
It has. So for the most part, majority of interviews now we're seeing are online. So they're taking place via Zoom, Skype, MS Teams. And we're seeing that the on-site interview is really not something that's happening, particularly because of COVID and most people are working from home. So your interview is going to be remote.
And so what sort of difference does that make in terms of preparation? And, you know that old adage that, you know, an employer makes a decision about you in the first 30 seconds. Is that true when you're doing it online, or do the rules change?
You know, it still is probably true, because really, for the most part, it's just thinking of the interview process itself. The press, the, you know, being able to answer your questions, being able to make an impression is still something that is there, regardless of whether the interview is online or not. But in terms of how to make that first impression on an online interview, it's important that you consider very, very simple practical things in terms of your web camera, your environment that you're in, in terms of what you're wearing. And I know eye contact is something that we always say to students or graduates in an interview. So it's very hard. That's one piece, I suppose, very hard when you're answering, particularly if there's multiple people on your interview panel. So the eye contact here is look directly into the camera, not the screen or the monitor, to ensure that, and your positioning in terms of your laptop and your camera, that, you know, it's not a nose view up that the interviewers are seeing. So it's still primarily, it's pretty much the same as an interview that if you were face-to-face, but there are things to consider. So, as I said, some of that is making sure your webcam is working, you have possibly good lighting. I do say sometimes you'll put a little bit of powder on in terms of the, you know, that you're not...
You're not too shiny looking.
Not too shiny looking. Even for the guys, they might not want to hear that. But also looking at what you're wearing. So we would say, you know, avoid bright colours, avoid even white, because if your background is white, you've just blended back into that background. So looking at, you know, neutral colours, soft, say blues, navies, in order to, in terms of what you're dressing, and you still need to dress to impress. So be very conscious that it's a formal interview. Check that your sound works. Also be conscious of facial expressions, because and your posture. So you still need to sit up straight, you still need to look engaged. Don't be too close to your camera. And it's a good idea to run a test that the camera, your positioning, your lighting, all is fine. So even getting somebody that you can call to run a test beforehand.
And yeah, that's the thing I think that people might get nervous is about technical glitches, because it can often happen that you do all that, you do the setup, and lo and behold, when it comes to do the interview, that something goes wrong, your mic doesn't work, the internet drops, and you can get flustered, and of course you've probably got a limited window. What do you do when techie things go wrong?
So the best thing there is that always agree beforehand with whoever you're communicating with, whether it's a hiring manager or someone in the HR department of the company or organisation you're interviewing. Exactly that, to check and say, if your Wi-Fi goes down, if there's someone is asking you a question, it's paused, we often see the frozen face on the screen, you know, so check beforehand who's going to call who back. And I think we're all working in a situation where we've come up with those types of occurrences. So it's not going to be new for an employer. And probably the employer maybe could also be in an area where they don't have good broadband. And the thing to be conscious there is they may actually have their cameras switched off in order to maximize broadband. So it's a good idea to check beforehand with the organization, with the HR, what exactly should you do in that case.
Can there be positives, Marie, that we're able to do interviews online?
Yeah, there are positives in the sense that you are in your own environment. You know, I often have said to students who are currently interviewing for placement, you know, depending on where your laptop is, you know, you could have little notes around that are not visible that maybe are, you know, we prepare these competency-based questions and in terms of, you know, teamwork and leadership and, you know, organisation skills. And you could have your little examples written up around out of vision, so that if you get stuck and you go blank, you're just having to look at your tips that you've written for yourself. So there's, you know, there are a lot of positives in that. And I think there's a lot of the positive too is that the interviewer knows this is a difficult thing to make an impression online. So they're very accommodating, you know. Can I just say one thing for anyone with a disability that are doing an online interview? It's very important that, you know, if they need accommodations with an online interview, that they communicate that with the employer. So, for example, if somebody is visually impaired, if you might need questions beforehand, or if you may have a speech and language issue, that you make that known to the recruiter beforehand. And it means you're putting your best version of yourself and that the interviewers are not making assumptions that is there something wrong with the line or something, you know, if you maybe a stammer, and that it's important that you, we would really encourage people to disclose, and once you disclose, there's protection around you as well in terms of the law, in terms of an interview. So, we're talking about students or graduates interviewing, but particularly anyone with a disability that might impact for video conferencing, we would definitely recommend a disclose to the HR.
Yeah, it's a really, really important point. What about just in terms of, you know, you're doing an interview for a job role that might have looked one way, but because of the times that we're in, looks totally different. Do you need to be flexible?
Oh, absolutely. And you need to be flexible regardless of COVID, to be honest. And an employer, that's one of the key skills employers look at. They want you to be, in terms of flexible, adaptable, and be able to do whatever needs to get done in the role. And, you know, even, for example, you might see salary expectations have changed. It is difficult for students who are graduates. You know, you're onboarded remotely. You're not really connected with your team in that physical sense, and that socialization is very important to feel part of the company. So you really need to show that flexibility and be able to ask questions, and don't be afraid to ask questions if you need help or you're unsure of what they're asking you, you know, when you get the job.
Very good advice. Thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. That's Marie Laffey, from the Career Development Centre at the National University of Ireland in Galway, giving advice on preparing for online interviews.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.